Another witness is talking of President Trump and Ukraine.
Lawyers say this person has firsthand knowledge of Trump's call with Ukraine's president. How might a second whistleblower impact an impeachment inquiry?
I'm Steve Inskeep with David Green, and this is Up First from NPR News. The U.S. is withdrawing troops from part of Syria. That leaves room for troops from neighboring Turkey to move in. What does this mean for Syria's ethnic Kurds, who are U.S. allies but regarded as Turkey's enemies?
And a labor strike against General Motors enters its fourth week now. It sounded like there was progress in the talks, but no longer. So what's next for GM and for tens of thousands of workers still on the picket line? Stay with us. We have the news you need to start your day.
Support for Up First and the following message come from Honest, striving to make better for you products. When you choose an Honest beverage, money goes to fair trade certified suppliers to help support their communities. Visit honesttea.com/podcast to learn more. Support also comes from LinkedIn Job Seeker. Knowing where to look is the first step to finding the right job. LinkedIn's got 20 million jobs and people who can help you find them. Find the job meant for you at linkedin.com/jobs.
Another witness has information about President Trump and his dealings with Ukraine.
Lawyers for the first whistleblower who filed an intelligence complaint say they're now representing a second person. That person says they have firsthand knowledge of the phone call between President Trump and Ukraine's president. This is the call, of course, that triggered an impeachment inquiry into the president.
And let's talk about this by NPR White House reporter Aisha Roscoe is with us this morning. Hi, Aisha.
Good morning.
Okay, so as we mentioned, a second person has now come forward, apparently with knowledge of President Trump and Ukraine. What are they alleging, and is the information that we're getting from this person new?
So they're saying that this second person is corroborating some of the allegations from the first whistleblower. And as you said, that this person has direct knowledge of some of those things that were talked about in the original complaint. We don't know the specifics of that at this point. But this is significant because President Trump and his supporters have attacked the first whistleblower's account as just hearsay. I should be clear that this second person hasn't actually filed a separate complaint, but they did talk to the Inspector General of the intelligence community, and the lawyers representing this whistleblower say that that is enough to provide them with legal protection from retaliation. Another potential wrinkle in this news is that one of the lawyers representing that first whistleblower tweeted that I can confirm that my firm and my team represent multiple whistleblowers in connection with this August 12th, 2019 disclosure, which is basically the complaint. It's unclear if multiple means more than two. Based on the English language, it means more than one. So it could just be the two whistleblowers that we're talking about, or we don't know if it means that there's more than just the two that we've been talking about.
Interesting. Well, the emergence of a second whistleblower, does that change the impeachment inquiry that is taking place in Congress right now in some way?
It gives it more momentum, and there's a long way to go. None of us know where this will end up, but these allegations are not going away anytime soon, especially when you have more people coming out about them and possibly adding to that first complaint or adding some weight to that first complaint. And it provides another avenue for Democrats to investigate.
Well, Aisha, all of this is coming, of course, as Democrats and the president are really ramping up their 2020 election campaigns. It's that time of year. How is this impeachment stuff playing out there?
Well, so you have the former Vice President Joe Biden and Trump. Both camps are out with ads attacking each other. People watching the NFL on Sunday might have seen this ad from the Trump campaign that falsely says that Biden promised Ukraine money in exchange for firing a prosecutor who was investigating his son. That is not true. There was international agreement that this prosecutor should be removed because he wasn't being effective at investigating corruption. And so Biden was passing along the message of the U.S. government. Biden, though, is kind of swinging back at President Trump and saying that Trump is coming at him because he is a Democrat that the president is really worried about facing. And he has this ad that calls Trump unhinged. Biden also has this op-ed in the Washington Post where he accused Trump of abusing his power and said that he's frantically pushing flat-out lies and debunk conspiracy theories against Biden and his family. So you really have the president and Biden directly clashing now.
And we're going to be hearing a lot more of that probably for the next year or so. What about this week, Aisha, as this impeachment inquiry moves ahead on the Hill? What should we expect?
So in the House, there are some closed-door depositions scheduled. Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, who is now well-known because of those texts that were released from Kurt Volker's testimony last week. Sondland is scheduled for a deposition on Tuesday. Also, you have Marie Yovanovitch, who was fired as U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. She's supposed to give a deposition later this week.
A lot to come. NPR White House reporter Aisha Roscoe. Thanks, Aisha.
Thank you.
All right. The United States is stepping aside in northern Syria, and Turkey's military is going to enter the area.
This is a complicated story, so let's recall the basics. The U.S. has fought against ISIS in Syria, and while doing that, the U.S. has employed local allies. Key U.S. allies in northern Syria include ethnic Kurds. But that same ethnic group is regarded with suspicion by neighboring Turkey, which has a Kurdish population and where some Kurdish groups are labeled as terrorists. Now, in part of Syria, the U.S. moves out and Turkey goes in. The White House says it will neither support nor be involved in the Turkish operation, but it won't get in the way either.
And let's turn to NPR's Peter Kenyon, who is following all this from his base in Istanbul. Hi, Peter.
Hi, David.
So the Kurds, so important here, they've been allies of the United States, but you have two NATO allies, Turkey and the U.S., with completely opposite views of these Kurdish fighters. Why is that?
Well, since the mid-1980s, the Turkish military has been fighting Kurdish militants from a group known as the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers' Party. Now, these Syrian Kurdish fighters are a different group, but they share some of the same ideology. And for Turkey, there's basically no difference. They say they're all anti-Turkish terrorists. Turkey's never been happy that the Pentagon partnered with the Syrian Kurds in their efforts to clear Islamic State's so-called caliphate in Syria. But then President Trump, when he declared victory over ISIS and said U.S. troops are coming out, that left these Syrian Kurdish fighters with a pretty uncertain future. Now, Erdogan says all preparations for a Turkish military operation are now complete, and the White House statement confirms that it believes Ankara will be going ahead with it.
But help me understand this even more here. I mean, aren't Turkish and U.S. militaries, the two of them, carrying out joint operations in this area, working together to secure parts of northern Syria, despite this different view of the Kurds?
Yes, absolutely. There have been joint patrols, three of them so far. The Pentagon has always said it takes Turkey's security concerns seriously. There have been ongoing talks focused on creating a safe zone in northern Syria, but there's some serious disagreement. Turkey wants that zone to be bigger than the U.S. envisioned, nearly 20 miles deep into Syrian territory, roughly 300 miles wide. And now this latest statement from the White House makes clear, as you mentioned, that the U.S. armed forces aren't supporting any Turkish operation, won't be involved in it, but it also basically says, hey, these Syrian Kurdish allies will now have to fend for themselves. And the Kurdish-led Syrian Defense Forces have responded with a statement confirming the U.S. withdrawal is underway and adding that this failure to meet U.S. commitments will have a great negative impact on the fight against Islamic State forces.
Why now, Peter? What is the timing of this?
Well, there is this question of a perceived threat from the Syrian Kurdish fighters that Turkey sees just across the border. But also here in Turkey, there's serious pressure to do something about 3.6 million Syrian refugees in Turkey. That's the official figure. And President Erdogan has said as many as 2 million refugees could be relocated to northern Syria once it's safe. So that's certainly part of the motivation.
All right. NPR's Peter Kenyon in Istanbul. Peter, thanks so much.
Thanks, David.
It looked like there was a glimmer of progress over the weekend, but that did not last long for nearly 50,000 striking auto workers.
Yeah, on Sunday, the United Auto Workers Union said that contract talks with General Motors had taken a, quote, turn for the worse. The union has been on strike over wages and the company's reliance on temporary workers since mid-September. That makes this one of the biggest and longest strikes for a private company in some 50 years.
All right. Michigan Radio's Dustin Dwyer has been following the story, and he joins us this morning from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Dustin.
Good morning.
So how did these all-important talks deteriorate over the last few days?
Well, what we understand, the information we're getting is from the UAW's Vice President, Terry Dittus, who sends letters to members to update them. And on Friday, he sent a letter saying that the talks had made good progress. And it was a great sign because it's been more than 3 weeks now. We're heading into our fourth week of the strike, and there hadn't been a lot of talk of good progress. But on Friday, they said there was good progress. By Sunday, that had completely changed. In his latest update on Sunday, he said that the union had sent its latest proposal to General Motors. He claimed that proposal included things like wages, signing bonus, job security, pensions, skilled trades, and other things, he says. But when he says that GM got back to the union, it didn't respond to any of those things in the union's latest proposal and instead just reverted back to GM's previous proposal that had been on the table. Now, GM says it's proposed to invest $7 billion, create 5,400 new jobs, invest in plants in Michigan and Ohio. It says it's negotiating in good faith and will continue to do so. But for right now, it certainly seems like things aren't going well.
And as the strike goes on and on and on, which matters to workers and families, obviously. What are people on the picket line telling you at this point?
Well, I was there last week when they picked up, a lot of workers picked up their first strike check. They're now eligible for their second strike check. Their strike pay is only $250 per week, which is not a lot to live off of. One guy told me it wouldn't even cover half of his propane bill. So it's just really starting to hurt workers at this point. It's really starting to be felt financially, both by the individual picketers on the line and by people who work at suppliers. There's been more suppliers doing layoffs. And the longer this goes, you can imagine it cascades farther and farther down the supply line. It starts to affect more and more businesses and hit more and more pocketbooks.
And what briefly is important to the workers on the picket line? What do they feel like they're fighting for most passionately?
Well, the thing that people say to me most is temporary workers. These are workers who are hired into GM but have no real recourse or benefits to stay on. They could be fired at any time. And the workers on the picket line say they really want to resolve that issue and get more security for these temporary workers.
Dustin Dwyer from Michigan Radio joining us from Grand Rapids, Michigan this morning. Dustin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, that's up first for Monday, October 7th. I'm David Green.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Join us here tomorrow. Subscribe to us where you listen to podcasts and rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And we appreciate you listening to Up First. And if you want more in-depth coverage of the stories we talked about today and a whole lot more, you can find that on NPR's Morning Edition. That is the show that Steve and I host along with Noel King and Rachel Martin. You can find Morning Edition and also find your NPR station by visiting stations.npr.org.
NPR's Code Switch is a podcast about race in America that's about all of us. Our histories, how we're represented, the ways we've worked together and worked against each other. You'll learn, you might get mad, you'll definitely laugh, but don't take my word for it. Just listen to NPR's Code Switch.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, American Express. Say yes to payment flexibility and card choices, including ones with no annual fee. Don't do business without it. Rates and fees apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/noannualfee.